Welcome to Vorpal Tales, Terrifying Tales, the podcast.
Gasp.
Episode 5. This evening we have Sean.
Hello.
And special guest star Eric. And the reason we have special guest star Eric is because we're going to talk about Dune. Take it away, Sean.
Dune. You know, that franchise that is obscure, nobody really knows about. I mean, there's that new movie coming out, I think, maybe, you know. Yeah, Dune. Dune
first
is
half
awesome.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. Forgot it's the first half. Holy crap. 2020, man. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Dune. It was a book written by, why is the man's name escaping me at the moment?
Frank Herbert.
I wanted to say Herbert Hoover, and that would have been way off. Frank Herbert, yes. There's like, how many books are there? Like 20 books.
Too many.
Just spanning a lot of the history, starting like the dawn of time to the end of time. Just there's, I think everybody knows about the main book of Dune, about Paul and his family getting betrayed, spoiler alert, and then sort of taking it back from for his fam. So, yeah, there was the... what was that, like the 86 movie his name's totally
85 86 by David Lynch. Yeah,
David Lynch. I wanted to say Herbert Lynch. Jesus Christ. By David Lynch. Yeah. It kind of goes off. It's got a lot of famous people in it. Like, you watch it and you're like, oh yeah, that guy.
A young but still somehow bald Captain Picard.
Right. Yes. Like, you just look at that. Hey, it's Captain Picard. Did that man ever have hair? Like,
well, to be fair, that was only what, like 4 years before Next Generation season one?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Was it really? Holy crap.
Yeah, and Next Generation started in 89.
Yeah. A couple of years away.
Freaking wild. It kind of goes off in a different direction with some of the material. It's mostly intact, it's mostly there. You have Sting rocking a most excellent codpiece and just.
Yeah. Yes,
it's one of those moments you're like, oh, Sting knows what kind of movie he's in. All right, then, cool.
Sting everybody understands else, Canley,
right? Yeah, everybody else is just sort of like playing it as they thought that they should play it, but Sting knows what kind of movie he's in. So then there was the sci-fi series, that's much better, much well done, sort of sticks more to the books, and it's a little more coherent. And Dune is, I think I've heard it described as not coherent. So, but it's a really good book. There's a lot of old sci-fi stuff sort of going on in there. A lot of, authoritarian religious sort of aspects that just, you know, it's kind of an adventure book, but there's a lot to think about with it. And then the famous Sam
Frank Herbert was actually basically, he was a hippie, and when he wrote the book in the 60s, it was entirely supposed to be a meta story about climate change and capitalism, and you can tell.
Yeah, that's pretty apparent.
Yeah. And the mistreatment of minorities, of course.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, that's always there. So, like we said, there's a new movie coming out that has my favorite, Jason Momoa. Nobody else in that movie matters. Maybe... Yep.
Jason Momoa and some new young sexy people we don't care about because they're like right. 10.
But no, what's his face is in that? Poe Dameron's in it. He's dead. Yeah. So
Poe Dameron,
yeah. Oscar Isaacs.
Oscar Isaacs, yeah.
Spider-Man's girlfriend. Yeah.
We literally just got done playing the awesome and brand new Dune, the RPG, so my mind's kind of blitzed. Trying to remember all these Dune facts. But yeah, so Dune's kind of your where if the Lord of the Rings was the bedrock of fantasy, I would say Dune is one of those pieces of the bedrock of sci-fi. Like, you got your, like, there's Star Trek, Star Wars, and then Dune, and you kind of branch out from there.
Yeah.
I would agree. And there's only two really great sci-fi space operas from that era, and Dune and Star Wars are it. Yeah.
Right. So, Eric, you're our expert. How far am I off here?
No, you're pretty close, actually. The comparison is always made between Dune and Lord of the Rings because it's really the only other comparable world that's so detailed and developed from the ground up from the creator's perspective. And yeah, so you're right on the money there as far as that's concerned. And it's incredibly dense with themes and philosophy, and there's a lot to it. It is an adventure story at the end of the day, at least the first book is. But yeah, it is very heavy with themes, and it starts to subvert a lot of the stuff that you initially think of when you think of sci-fi adventure stories. Because at the time that Dune came out, the adventure stories that were coming out at the time were like, oh, here's your Aryan superhero. You follow him, you know? He will solve all your problems. And Frank Herbert had a very big problem with that, so he decided to write Dune, for many other reasons.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it was the first real saga, too, for sci-fi.
It was pretty big. It hit pretty big, and it won the first, the first Hugo and Nebula Awards.
Pretty sure.
64, 65, I want to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty big. And ever since then, it's just, it's influenced science fiction perpetually throughout the years, you know, through different mediums, not just from the book. I can imagine everybody has a different way of connecting to Dune in some way. If they didn't read the book, they got through it from another angle, which is kind of like my thing.
Yeah, if you've ever fought the purple worm in D&D or any type of worm in any part of any sort of RPG ever, it's because of Dune having the sandworms. So
for me personally, it has influenced the way I approach every sci-fi I do on tabletop RPGs, like more than any other property for sure.
Yeah, I think if you stick to Dune, like I know I strayed off in some directions and got a little more fantastical, but I do feel like if you come back to Dune, you're going to run a better story if you just sort of use that as your template, because there's a lot of, like, Dune's really complex because, Paul and the Atreides end up sort of getting duped, though they knew it was coming, but not how it was coming. So, like, there's an empire, and the empire's like, Duke Atreides is kind of annoying and an upstart, so let's use his rivals to sort of screw them over and kill out his family, and then everybody gets rich. And then Paul survives with his mom, and they have babies, and not together. But there's just it's a revenge story. It's a adventure story. It's break down the empire.
False Messiah story.
Like, let's, you know, smash down those walls. You know, bring down the system. Everything is corrupt. Let's start anew, and let's ride some sandworms on nuclear warheads into a city, and let's win this day, sort of craziness.
That's actually a point most people miss because they never get past the first book, is that
correct.
Paul Atreides was a false savior, and he was not a hero. Mm-mm. He actually comes to terms with that later and just like, I'm out, I quit. Because this is a bad idea.
Oh, I fucked up. It's been 3,500 years, but I figured it out, guys. I figured it out. Thanks for coming along with me on this one.
I only had to blow up the whole universe to figure it out.
My bad. Yeah. We're better off. We're in a better place. Later, deuces. I'm a sandworm.
Oh no, that's his son. Paul Atreides.
That's right. Paul
dies in a normal lifetime after his jihad burns down the universe.
Yeah,
it's Leto who turns takes into it to a the god. Next level.
Never meet your heroes. You know, just never meet your heroes.
Leto actually apparently did follow the Grand Quetzex Haderach vision, and what he did was necessary, according to him. Apparently, 10,000 years of fascism was necessary for humanity to evolve.
I mean, you know, I do not agree with that statement, but
neither did most of the universe.
Right.
Correct.
But how do you fight an immortal sandworm with water, apparently? But, you know, nobody figured that one out.
The thing with Leto in particular is that he, and I'm semi-quoting from the book here, he wanted to teach humanity a lesson that they would remember in their bones.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to make it so that they never did this shit again, because what he saw, what was happening was that human society in general goes through these boom and bust periods, and they always give rise to dictators, and there's always a revolution, and then it happens all over again. And he wanted to stop and break that cycle. So he's like, okay, you want a fucking dictator? I'm going to be the biggest fucking dictator of all time. And so much so that you're going to beg me to stop and you're never going to do this shit again. They're going to write songs about how fucking terrible I was. And it's going to teach you that you're never going to repeat this fucking shit again. And he called that the golden path. Okay.
Yeah. Eric, did that work?
Yes and no.
Yeah, we still don't actually know because they're still writing books.
Oh, they're still writing that book? Okay, well.
Yeah, like, humans did wander out into the universe, but things didn't exactly get better.
Well, you know, life goes on, right? So, yeah. Eric, you're running Dune now on Monday nights. How's that for you? How do you like the new system? How's it stick to the material?
It really does. And thank you for letting me run it. I find that this iteration of Modiphius's 2D20 system is my favorite so far. And I've looked through all of them for the most part.
It is mine so far too.
Yeah. It's really, from every perspective, it's really elegant in its approach. And it's
well refined. The 2D20 system is very elegant. It's a very elegant system.
It's a vast improvement in terms of simplicity from when you go from something like Conan, for example, to this. Like, it's like night and day for me, at least.
Right.
So I personally really like it. It's my preferred 2D20 system thus far.
Cool. Any shout outs about it? Anything that you want to highlight? Anything that you thought was done real well or just sort of stood out to you?
I like how the approaches they took to everything with concerns to, like, you know, you have dueling, which is a big part of it, and skirmishes and warfare, all these different aspects to that universe that are inevitable, you know, when you're going into it. But I like how they simplified it and how they made it easy to attribute one to the other. So there were similarities between all of them. And so if you read one, you kind of got the basics of all the other ones as well. Which I thought was really nicely done. Like, it's not like Shadowrun or some game like that where it's like 36 different systems for 36 different character types and all sorts of, like, everything within the system works with the same sort of base mechanics in place, and, you know, like, everything rhymes and it works well with itself. So I found that to be refreshing. Yeah,
cool. Yeah, I found that games that start, this is tabletop, video games, whatever, just games that, if you're not using the same system to do everything in the game, there's a problem, sort of. So
problems definitely arise. Yes,
right. Yeah, you know, one or two, sure, but when it's like, okay, I'm into my fifth system now, guys, what are we doing here?
Right.
So Tyler, let's do this. What was your first introduction to Dune?
The book. I read the original book when I was a young kid. I didn't actually see the movie until I was a late teenager, the 80s movie. But I was, by the time I did, I was halfway through the third book.
Nice.
Yeah. So raw from the source.
Nice. Yeah. When did you finally see the movie?
I saw the original one when I was 17. And it was just that was an interesting experience, like all things. what was his name again?
David Lynch.
Yeah, all David things Lynch. David yeah. Lynch, you just walk away going, yep, not gonna process or analyze that. But the miniseries was very impactful for me, and I've rewatched it many times.
Yeah, it's a great series. I know I got into it because probably when I was, I mean, I had to have been at least in my mid-teens, and Sci-Fi Channel made such a stink about being able to show whatever version it was at the time. So that was on like every Friday for months. So I would just pick it in pieces and watch it. And just, if you watch Dune in pieces, it melts your fucking brain. I didn't actually get a chance to sit down and watch the whole thing until after like the sixth time seeing it in pieces. And then you're finally like, oh, it just melts your brain naturally. Okay, cool. Got it. All right. And then I think my brother was younger than me and actually got into the books. He read a lot when he was, I stopped reading for some reason when I got a computer. He read it, and then I was like, okay, let me read this book, figure out what it's all about. And then I want to say I read it because the sci-fi miniseries was coming out. And so I read it, and I think I read a few of the books and then just stopped because I was like, okay, my brain is full. I'm good now. I'm good with Dune. I think I'm Duned out. And then watch the sci-fi series. It's a really, really good series. Rain loves James McAvoy, so I think I could get her to watch that version of it, maybe.
Young James McAvoy.
Yeah, and then, you know, Dune's one of those fun, like, wiki dives that you can do. Like, you can just go to the Wikipedia of Dune and just get lost in it with just the minutiae of world building that thing has. So I do that every few years just to be like, oh yeah, that's right. And then so Eric, how did Dune become your favorite?
Well, it's a little bit of a story, but my entire family actually has a really interesting and weird obsession with Dune.
This is a family curse. Nice.
This is a family thing. Yeah, for real. I was introduced to it because of the 1985 movie by David Lynch, but oddly enough, my sister had a thing for Kyle MacLachlan, who's played Paul Atreides in the movie at the time.
Okay.
So we ended up seeing it at the theater, and I was like, I don't know, 6 or 8 years old or whatever, and I was just like, what the fuck am I watching? It didn't mean shit to me back then because I was too young, but she was completely hooked on it, and she ended up getting the board game. She mastered it and destroyed any of us who played with her. Around 9th or 10th grade, I discovered the real-time strategy game at a Blockbuster video store, okay? Mm-hmm. Dune, the Battle for Arrakis. I don't know if you remember this one, but the first ever real-time strategy game that predated, I think, Command & Conquer and Warcraft.
Yeah, it's the first real-time strategy game, if you go back, yeah.
And I got it for, like, the Genesis, you know? So I finished the game, and both my parents were eyeing this thing and would actually get into arguments, playful arguments, with one another over who got to play it next. True story. My parents rented that game from our Blockbuster store so many times that the clerk straight up told them, you could have purchased the game like 3 times over. So, you know, they did.
That I did not know this about your family. This is,
yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
It's a crazy. The curse words that came out of my dad's mouth when he played that thing were just superb. But after getting completely sucked into that, I wanted to know more about it. So I jumped on my parents' Acer computer and fired up AOL, and I was searching around for it. And I searched down the movie, and I was like, well, I'll have to watch this, you know, because I rewatched it. And then both my parents were now wanting to rewatch the movie that inspired the game that they were currently obsessing about. So we rented it from the same Blockbuster, of course, and watched it on my little ass TV. We were confused as shit, but we were still looking around for the source to, you know, to try to make sense of the whole thing. I picked up the paperback at like a Walden Books or whatever, and I went right in. Mm-hmm. And I sat around between classes reading this crusty old sci-fi fantasy novel I picked up at a used bookstore. And as soon as I finished the first one, I went and picked up the sequels, which, you know, for like $1 or whatever it was back then. And I got into some real philosophical stuff, like don't blindly follow leaders. Church and state is a really bad idea. Religions can be used to manipulate people into doing terrible shit, you know, stuff like that. That's how I kind of got introduced to it after graduating high school and college. I found out that Frank Herbert's son had teamed up with some Star Wars scribe and started churning out prequels, sequels, and not a joke, in betweequels. So when I found that out, I was like, oh, I gotta start reading all this shit. And I started getting them. And my sister to this day still picks up the Dune books and drops the hardcover off at my place whenever she, you know, stops by amazing. To get me a gift or whatever. So that's kind of like my too long of a story to get introduced to that universe.
What's yours, Sean?
My experience, I told mine, didn't I? Yeah, I said mine.
Oh,
your brother read the
book.
Yeah,
my brother. Eric's overwhelmed yours so much, I missed it.
Right,
I didn't miss it. I mean, it burned it out of my brain.
Sorry, I don't have the Dune family curse to lean back on here. So, you know,
by the way, Eric's family sounds amazing.
Yeah, like that. I know my mom's kind of big into Dune, and my dad loves like H.G. Wells stuff, but never had that level of conversation about it at the end of the day. So
that and the way they fight over a video game is amazing.
Right. That, I mean, I think in the history of the planet, there have been very few parents before now that have ever fought over a video game.
Over who got to play it on a
Our generation, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, our generation, maybe now, but I would say back in the day that was probably not, that was probably a rare occurrence. But I think from just sort of picking apart the story, I didn't pick up on the fact that basically the tale of the Atreides is like Irulan's story. Like she writes it and sort of chronicles it.
Yeah.
I kind of missed that somewhere along the way. I don't even think I picked up on that when I was reading the book, maybe. But so she just kind of became my favorite character just because she's just sort of sitting there going, what's going on? Cool. Let me write about this shit. This is wild.
He's actually really active.
Yeah, she was pretty actively involved because she had prana bindu conditioning and used it. She saved the twins at least once.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. And then, so yeah, she's kind of like my favorite character because most of the other characters are not likable.
Yeah, just,
yeah, they have a lot of flaws where you're like, that's my favorite. Well, that guy did the. Oh.
I mean, even Irulan is a complex character. Like she's likable in that, you know, she's recurring and, you know, she helped out the twins like Tyler pointed out, but at some point she secretly has contraceptives fed to Chani so that Paul does not give birth to an heir.
Oh, I remember like, that.
Is a thing. That is a thing that happens and
Gets they caught straight up too.
And gets caught and by Chani, and Chani confronts her, and that's a scene.
Well, you know, when you spawn the end of the world, a society as you know it. So, Eric, what are some of your favorite aspects from Dune?
I mean, a lot of the like, there's so much to choose from, but yeah, a lot of the intrigue and the political wheeling and dealing and. A lot of that stuff is really interesting, and the way that the world that Frank Herbert created evolves over time. Like you get to see it happen in short bits and then long stretches of time. The first three novels are like one complete story if you look at them that way. You know, with Dune just being like the big adventure story, and then like the Messiah, the second volume is like the subversion of what you were expecting after, you know, the big hero, the heroic finish or whatever. And then the third one kind of picks up after that and introduces like the next generation, so to speak, of these characters of that line, and what they go on to do from there is like mind blowing. Yeah, it's very interesting. Just like it's very wild and out there, and I'm all for it. I'm here for it.
I have two questions for Eric, deep ones as we near the end. One, what's the most important message you can take away from it? And two, what's the lesson we learn from Alia, in your opinion?
Oh, shit. Okay. So, for me, easily the most important lesson to take away from Dune, if you take anything away from it, is never follow your leaders blindly. Never, you know, look to somebody and go, yep, that person's going to solve all our problems and they're infallible. That's a bad way to go.
I mean, and, there's no recent thing that we could, like...
No, to. Not at all. Not at all relevant.
Yeah, no. I you're just not making relevancy, Eric, but continue anyways, you know.
The thing with Alia was that's a hard one to get because she's all kinds of fucked up. She was trying to do what her brother did, and it was she didn't realize that prescience, the ability to know the future, so to speak, is a trap in and of itself. What they come to find out later is that they're not actually predicting or seeing the future, they're creating it. And it's, not it's only creating that, a trap for all of them.
Her entire existence wasn't her own fault.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that was a... She's a tragic character, but she gets she delved too deep into those powers, and she became literally possessed by them, and that spelled her doom ultimately.
So never try to predict the future, because you're just creating it.
Just go with the flow, man.
Also, maybe don't drink water that sandworms pee and poop in while you're pregnant.
I mean, if you take away anything from the story, don't eat worm shit and pee
while pregnant.
Any other time, fine. While pregnant, that's when
that's consult your doctor. Spice is basically dried worm sweat.
Gross. What was your second question, Tyler?
Those were the two.
Oh, gotcha. Cool. So I just wanted to go back to the TTRPG real quick. Saying the 2D20 system is very elegant is very interesting, because we played Conan, which is very brutal, very hardcore sort of fantasy. I have been reading Fallout, because we're going to run that in a couple weeks. And then I did Infinity. So you get Conan, which is just this brutal combat system. And then I figured out there's this whole verbal attack system that's in that game that are just like, oh, I can curse at people and piss them the fuck off. Awesome. So you got that. And then you get like Infinity, which there's intrigue and sort of battle and stuff. And then you get Fallout, which is basically just the game Fallout with 2D20s. And then you get something with like Dune, where the way that they have integrated this into a tabletop system is just amazing, because you have your abilities, and then you have what it's called your drives, and then that's your role system. And there's no real combat per se in the game. It's just this back and forth of elegance of just, I'm going to do this thing. Okay. Roll, see what happens. And then you like, I would say it's one of those systems that's just a storyteller's dream, because there's no crunchiness in the middle. Like, I remember building my character is just like, oh, this, you know, you don't have to think a lot about systems and mechanics, and just, you can actually develop a character. And I remember going in and just like, all right, I'm going to make a very Dune character. And by the end of it, I was just like, oh, this is a very not Dune character, but it still works because it's Dune. Just somebody who doesn't want power, somebody who doesn't really want to get involved in the intrigue, and just somebody who wants to sort of exist. And that sounds like a very Sean character, but that ended up not, that was just because the system sort of allowed it by the random choices and things that I was reading about. So it was really cool. It's a really, really cool system. And I think it's because Dune's a very, as much it is an action adventure sort of story, and sometimes a lot of it's just sitting around talking and plotting in zones of silence.
Yeah.
Like it's a very sort of manipulative sort of talky system, and I think it is probably one of the best games that I've ever seen. Just sort of it seems pretty solid, so hats off to Modiphius for that.
And also point out to anyone listening, as Sean in his old age becomes Eric with games, it's not this as simple as Sean makes it sound. It's actually wildly complex and deep with a very simple coding, which is what I like about it. It has three entire separate modes of gameplay, each of which has their own unique tactic systems.
Yeah, built in. There's this one little, and for the love of God, please read the asides, because they mention a whole lot. But there's this one little aside that's like, so there's two ways you can play this game. You can either manipulate everybody into doing the stuff that you want them to do, or you can actually do it yourself. And it's just like, oh, I can literally not play the game to some degree, sort of.
Agents and architects,
and architects.
You're still playing, you're just moving into the strategy game mode.
Right. It's a very
chess.
Yes. Which is very Dune. So
and it is as complex as chess if you read it correctly.
Yes. There's only, you know, four or five choices of combinations that you might want to roll, but those rolls have some very complex things behind them. Like it's an easy, it's one, I guess, easy system to learn, easy system to play, very hard to master sort of situation.
Yep, like chess.
Yeah. Yeah. Like chess. cool. Yeah. So Dune is awesome. I think if anybody, I think it's one of those books, like you can just, you should go, this is something you should read. Like this is just read this one book. Don't dive into the other weirdness. Maybe read the second book. And then like, I think it's one of those good foundational books that people should read if they ever want to be a writer or storyteller or something like that. I think it's one of those stories that you should definitely have.
So how far have you gone, Eric?
Oh, my.
Have you read all the new stuff that his son is writing where they go all the way back and actually... So you should check out, and anyone who's listening, the book series that delves with the actual sentient machine war too, because they're writing that now. And that's actually pretty fascinating. Yeah.
Oh, the Beleriand Jihad. Yeah, they wrote a trilogy of it.
Yeah.
I own all three of them. I could never finish them though. I tried like several times to finish the first book, couldn't do it. The ones that predated those though, that are just,
they go farther forward. Yeah.
Yeah, that House Atreides, House Harkonnen, and House Carino. Those three are fun. Like they're fine. They're nice little simple stories that you can get into, and it's a probably the best little primer before you get into actual Dune. If you're like really nervous about getting your hands on the original novel, those act like a nice little hand-holding exercise to get you into the universe and to kind of get you situated before you start diving head on into like the denseness that is the 500 page plus volume of the Frank Herbert's sci-fi masterpiece.
Especially House Atreides, because it never really gets hammered home, even in the movies, that it's twice as bad as you think it is, because they're betrayed and abandoned to endless wastelands when they spent their entire lives on a planet that's 80% water. Like that whole aspect of the radical change is kind of glossed over, because the Atreides homeworld has very little land and it's always raining or foggy or wet.
Yeah.
The literal exact opposite. And they have to give that planet away to take Arrakis.
Yep. There's a lot of stuff in those earlier novels. Those are about the only ones I read, were the House trilogy, is I believe they're called. And but they since gone and like wrote, I don't know how many other extra books, and in between books 2 and 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, they wrote a book about that. And it's like, yeah, it's like
they're doing a lot of filler, and they're doing a lot of late stage stuff too, where it's past the universe is wrecked by Leto Jr.
Yeah. They technically finished the series, because Frank Herbert wrote about 6 of the original Chronicles, as they're called, and those are the OG books. And he died before he was actually able to work on and finish the 7th novel. So that's when his son and that Star Wars scribe Kevin J. Anderson picked it up and started churning out the Dune novels. And they made the 7th Dune book, quote unquote, into 2 books. So there's actually 8 that complete the original series, as it were. Did I lose you?
Oops, sorry.
We just hit a pause, but that's okay. That's what editing is for.
Yeah, just my mind went blank. How much time we got left?
We're good. So
good. All right.
But I think that brings the end of the book line is a good place to bring an end to our talk about Dune. We should get Eric on here more. He's a good talker.
Yeah. Eric, what are some of your other loves so that we can
bring you on? Oh, geez. Like in terms of what? Like
Cyberpunk. We need to have you talk about Cyberpunk.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I'll talk Cyberpunk sideways. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we'll need to remember that one. It's a good one.
Diceless game systems.
I actually do want to talk Diceless Game Systems, because I think that I think that's something that should be addressed, because I'm getting old.
Sure, I'll talk about Diceless Game Systems all day. I still have some of them on my shelf. So,
and I think absolutely. Like there's a blend, there's a magical sort of subsection that I think playing and reading Diceless Game Systems, you can learn a lot about running games and sort of figuring out game. Yeah, I think that would be a good one to talk about. Anyway, this is Dune episode. Yeah, Dune, it's awesome. You should read it.
At least
you should read it. You should read it. You should watch it. Definitely try to track down that sci-fi series. And then I'm kind of excited for the new movie that's coming out. So if anything more than Jason Momoa is in it for at least 20 minutes, I hope. I would like a warm hug for that man.
And Sean thought, because of how I started, we would end without a pun. He was wrong. Hey, Eric.
Oh, no.
Hey, Eric.
A pun? Yeah.
Eric, what do you call a scary icing you can't get rid of?
I don't know. What do you call it?
A boomerang. We'll see you next time, folks, on Terrifying Tales Talk.
I hate everything.